Israel presents.
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for, well, it's for Parshat Beha'alotecha, which in Israel is the Parsha we read this Shabbat. In Chutz La'aretz, people will be reading Parshat Naso. So for the next number of weeks, five to be specific, we're going to be equivocating that way, and of course, since I like the calendar and its statistics, I'll be explaining that fairly well. So let's start that again. And my hesitation this time was on purpose. The show is for Parshat Beha'alotcha. Recording and first broadcast is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, Yud Bet, the 12th of Sivan 5769, June 4th. If you live outside of Israel and you happen to be looking at a Jewish calendar, it will say that this Shabbat we read Naso. The fact of the matter is, we in Israel read Naso last Shabbat, which was the second day of Shavuot for everyone outside of Israel. In Israel, we only have one day of Shavuot, and therefore we continued with Parshat HaShavua rather than holding off on it for a week, and therefore we will be out of Parshat HaShavua alignment between Israel and Chutz La'aretz last week, this week, Beha'alotcha and Yer Naso. I say you, for those who are listening in Chutz La'aretz. Next week, we've got Shlach. Chutz La'aretz has Beha'alotcha. Then we have Korach, and they have Shlach. Then we have Chukat, and they have Korach. And then we have Balak, and there's the catch-up. In Chutz La'aretz, they will be reading Chukat and Balak together. Now, if you didn't follow that, don't worry about it. The show is going to be for Beha'alotcha. And if you live in Chutz La'aretz, it's for next week's Parshat HaShavua, not this week's. But that's the way it is. And since this show originates in Jerusalem and in Israel, and we have the famous statement, Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah, Udvar Hashem Mirushalayim, it is out of Zion and out of Jerusalem that Torah and the Word of God come. I don't mean to be presumptuous, but Torah Tidbits is a little bit of that. Hopefully a lot of that. That's the story. The show is for Beha'alotcha. So you've got the date. We're not counting the Omer anymore, so I don't have to tell you that. Once again, 12th of Sivan, and because it's the 12th of Sivan, it is still within 7 days of Shavuot, counting Shavuot. Shavuot was last Friday, the 6th of Sivan. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 is a period of time that had Shavuot been a 7-day festival like Pesach and like Sukkot, then these 7 days would also be the festival. And it is said that in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, when people came to Yerushalayim for Shavuot, they did not just come for the day, but they stayed around and made it a week-long, festive kind of atmosphere. And therefore, this manifests itself with a common custom in Israel, not to say Tachanun, on any of these days of Miluim. Miluim in the sense of filling out Shavuot into a 7-day festival. In the time of the Beit HaMikdash, Korbanot were brought during that period by the people that made Aliyah LeRegel, made the pilgrimage to Jerusalem, and there is a vestige of a little bit of a festive feeling until and including the 12th of Sivan, which is today. So that's the story, and as far as we are concerned, our choice between Psalm 121 and Psalm 130 We do 121 when we don't say Tachanun, and that's what we're going to do now. Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph. Shir Lama Alot, Esa Einai El Heharim Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai Osei Shamayim Va'aretz. Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha Al Yanum Shomerecha. Hine Lo Yanum V'lo Yishan Shomer Yisrael. Adonai Shomerecha Adonai Tzilecha Al Yad Yiminecha. Yomam Hashemesh Lo Yakeka V'yoreach Baloyla. Adonai Yishmorcha Mikol Ra Yishmor Et Nafshecha. Adonai Yishmor Tzeitecha Uvoecha Me'ata V'ad Olam. We don't usually do it in English also, but we will once in a while, and today is one of those onces. So here's the English of Psalm 121. For that purpose, I am using the new Koren Sidur, together with the Orthodox Union, a lovely piece of work in Hebrew and in English, a song of ascents. I lift my eyes up to the hills. From where will my help come? My help comes from God, maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot stumble. He who guards you does not slumber. See, the guardian of Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps. God is your guardian. God is your shade. I guess he does not translate that word. At your right hand. The sun will not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. God will guard you from all harm. He will guard your life. God will guard you, your going and coming, now and forevermore. Sorry for the little flubbing there. I don't know what to tell you about the word shade. That sort of threw me when I saw it. See, he capitalizes shade here. The word in Hebrew is tzilcha, tzilcha, al yad yiminecha. God is your shade, so at your right hand. I guess he capitalizes it because it is a description here of God. One comment in the footnote, one of the great expressions of trust in God's protection, this psalm is recited in times of trouble. The Hebrew root, shin mem resh, guard, protect, appears 6 times in this short psalm. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha umeyafela leora umishibud legeula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. I'd like to play now a track of music. I'm not going to tell you the name of the song. You will hear it in a moment. And take it as a momentary quiz. You do not have to respond with the answer. I will reveal the answer after the song. But it's here on purpose. It's a pleasant song. And it's timely while not being timely. How's that for an obscure kind of clue?
Shahani
Okay, the song was Yevonim. It's a Hanukkah song. It's not timely as far as the calendar is concerned, but it is timely as far as Parshat Behalotcha, because the beginning of Parshat Behalotcha is the Torah reading of the eighth day of Hanukkah, part of the Torah reading of the eighth day of Hanukkah, dealing with the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash, the Haftarah, that we read for Behalotcha is exactly the same that is read on Shabbat Chanukah. And as such, it gives us another opportunity, rather than just at Chanukah time, to look at certain aspects of Chanukah, if we so choose. This is a phenomenon that's not unique to this issue. What is a fact of life is that the events that the Torah tells about on Parshat HaShavua only rarely match their calendar dates. We do not read about the Exodus from Egypt in the Torah in the yearly cycle of weekly readings at Pesach time. On Pesach, we depart from reading the weekly Sedra so that we can read special passages from the Torah that deal with Yetziat Mitzrayim, with the Exodus. Shavuot morning, the reading is borrowed from Parshat Yitro. When we read Parshat Yitro about the Sinai experience, revelation at Sinai, the receiving of the Torah, the Ten Commandments, it's not Shavuot time then. So we have two opportunities to bring up a topic in a timely fashion. Of course, you could talk about these at any time that you want, but somehow when it's related to the time, it fits better to speak about something. So we can talk about Chanukah time, and we do. And the reading of Parshat Naso last week, or in Chutz Laaretz this week, the end of which is the reading of the Torah on all the days of Chanukah, which speaks about the original Chanukat HaMizbeach, the dedication of the altar, the dedication of the Mikdash, of the Mishkan. The rededication, which took place Chanukah time, makes a significant link, and that's a theme for Chanukah. But it's also a theme for Parshat HaShavua, the weekly Torah portion, now. So, whether I'm going to discuss Chanukah or not I don't know. I will say that this is considered a remez to Hanukkah from the Torah, that there are levels of meaning as there are to much of Torah, most of Torah, all of Torah, where on one level this is a command by God to Moshe to speak to Aharon, the Kohen, to kindle the menorah, and that has one level of understanding. On a different, I almost said deeper, I don't think it's deeper, it's different level of understanding, there is another Kohen later on. His name was Matityahu. He was a Chashmonai. He had five sons known as Maccabees, Maccabim, Chashmonaim, and they were the significant individuals who brought about the victory, which is Chanukah, over the Greeks. And they kindled the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash. So even though the Chanukah story is post-biblical, it has its roots on a little bit of a clue, hint, fingerprint kind of level in the Torah, in these parshiot of Naso and Beha'alotcha. And as I said, the Haftorah for this week is the same as Shabbos Chanukah, so there's a certain feeling of been there, did it, do it again. Again, I say, not only does this give us an opportunity to bring up the topic of Chanukah again, but maybe specifically the sort of echoes in Jewish history of the Chanukah story, which echo to our time as well. So we have nations that stand up against us, and we have God defending us, and we have our own people who are going through the effort, the hishtadlus as it's known, to cope and to fight, and with God's help we will be successful. Jumping to a different aspect of the Parsha Baha'alotcha, there's another example of a timely and untimely topic. The topic is Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni is the 14th of Iyar, almost a month ago. And a month ago, we discussed, and many people studied and taught about Pesach Sheni. Well, here, almost a month later, is another opportunity to bring up the topic, which is an interesting one. And that's because in this week's Torah reading of Beha'alotcha, which I keep repeating just to make sure you know which weekly reading we're talking about, because here you have God said to Moshe in the Sinai wilderness in the second year following the Exodus, on the first day of, in the first month, Bachodesh HaRishon Lemor, in Nisan, that reminding Moshe that the people should fulfill and celebrate the first annual Korban Pesach, the year before they had come out of Egypt. On that night before the Exodus, they had done the Korban Pesach, which had certain features that applied only to that very first time in Egypt, and were not perpetuated in the yearly celebration. But there are other aspects, for example, that the Korban Pesach is eaten roasted, and bones are not broken, and no leftovers for the morning. These are some of the rules that are in perpetuity for Korban Pesach, and the Torah is setting down God reminding Moshe to tell the people to do it. The Torah then says Moshe did what he was asked and reminded the people. And then the Torah tells us that the people did as Moshe told them to, as God had reminded him to tell them, and everything was fine. So they brought the first annual Korban Pesach. Then the Torah tells us that there were some individuals who were tame, ritually impure, from contact with a dead body, and that invalidated them from participating in the Korban Pesach. They came to Moshe and to Aharon, and they said, Anachnu tameim l'nefesh adam, we are tame, true, but lama nigara levilti hakriv et korban Hashem b'moado. Why should we miss out on bringing this very special sacrifice betoch b'nei Yisrael, together with our brethren? Moshe said to them, Imdu v'eshma'a ma yitzaveh Hashem lachem. Let us see what God will command you. And then the passage that follows, which happens to also be borrowed as the Torah reading for the sixth day of Pesach, it's about Pesach Sheni, which says that if a person will be tamei or distant from the place that Korbanot are brought, namely now Yerushalayim, then he is obligated to bring Korban Pesach 1 month later on the 14th of Iyar. That's the day that's referred to as either Pesach Sheni or Pesach Katan. Why am I telling you about Pesach Sheni a month after Pesach Sheni, even though it's part of Parshat HaShavua? I would like to look at it the other way. I believe it's part of Parshat HaShavua, or its being part of Parshat HaShavua, tells you it's okay to talk about it again. Maybe you didn't talk about it the first time. Maybe someone didn't hear you. There's something that says, speak about me, I make a point, and there's something, a message to take home. So we're going to do some of that in a moment. We'll be right back.
I'm Rod Serling. You're listening to
Torah Tidbits Audio.
Rest your eyes.
Okay, we're talking now about Pesach Sheni with the understanding that it really was a month ago, and now it's part of Parshat HaShavua, which actually doesn't make a difference in our context of today, since we don't have the practice of Pesach Sheni without a temple, without the Beit HaMikdash. Yet we learn about Pesach Sheni, and there are very significant, even profound messages in the whole topic of Pesach Sheni. And that's why any time of year it would be okay to bring up the subject, and especially when it's Pesach Sheni on the calendar, and equally especially when it's in Parshat HaShavua, as it is. With that understanding, let's take another fresh look at the topic. There is a division of mitzvot in the Torah between time-related mitzvot and open-ended mitzvot that are not related to time. If there's a mitzvah to give tzedakah, charity, you give it today. If you didn't give it today, give it tomorrow. If you didn't give it tomorrow, give it the next day. There, it's an ongoing kind of thing. It is not restricted to time. The time-related mitzvot are on the 10th day of Tishrei is Yom Kippur, and you have to fast. If you don't fast on Yom Kippur, there are several possibilities. Either knowledgeable, intentional, willful, spiteful, not fasting, or I forgot, or a person is sick and is required to eat by the laws of health, which are part of Jewish law. One way or the other, if a person did not fast on Yom Kippur, he can't come and say, the next day I feel better, or I regret not having fasted yesterday. What should I do? The 10th of Tishrei is Yom Kippur. There is no makeup for it. If it rains day and night for the entire 7 days of Sukkot, and the following week is beautiful Indian summer, dry, sunny, comfortable, there is no makeup for Sukkot. Sukkot is time-related, time sensitive. As far as Korban Pesach, the Passover sacrifice, the Torah has mentioned many times that it is on the afternoon of the 14th day of Nisan that you bring Korban Pesach. If you miss that because you are Tameh and you can't bring it, because you're far away from the place, because you're sick, because you're hungover, because you forgot to buy a lamb, because anything, whatever the reason, the answer should have been Avar Yomo Batel Korbano. When the day passes, the opportunity for the sacrifice has become time out, and that's it. There is no makeup for it. That could have been the Torah's answer to these people who came and said it's not fair. Fair or not fair, it's a time-related, time-specific mitzvah. You miss the time, you're out. If you're out because of no good reason or because you intentionally and spitefully didn't do it, you're in big, big trouble. If you have a valid, legitimate excuse, you're okay. You're covered. But that's not the way it was. Built into the Torah by God was the response to the people who came and said, we want to participate and we don't want to be left out. The response is that anyone who is Tameh or Derech Rechoka, ritually defiled or distant from the place of the Korban Pesach, shall bring Korban Pesach 1 month later on the 14th of Iyar. If you object and you say that doesn't make any sense, the time of Korban Pesach is the 14th of Nisan in the afternoon, and that's all, and it is extremely time sensitive, then you would be right. And you can view, as Maimonides does, the mitzvah of Korban Pesach is not a second opportunity to bring Korban Pesach, because there is no second chance for that. The day passes, that's it. But we have something new here. We have, if you didn't do that, we're going to give you something else to do. Actually, it's very similar. And it will be dated 1 month from now on the 14th in the afternoon of the second month. And you will bring it with all of the rules of the first Korban Pesach. That all has to be qualified by an asterisk. The Korban Pesach is slaughtered in the afternoon of the 14th of Iyar, just like it was in the 14th of Nisan. The animal is roasted, just like that. It is eaten that night together with matzah and maror. And yet there are a few, let's call them peripheral details, which are not the same. Major example is you do not have to get rid of chametz from your possession when you are bringing Pesach Sheni. In Pesach Rishon, on the 14th of Nisan, nobody in your group who are participating with you in the Korban Pesach may be in possession of chametz at the time of the bringing of the Korban Pesach. When it comes to Pesach Sheni, you could have chametz in your house. You don't have to sell it. You don't have to get rid of it. You don't burn it or anything like that. It's a non-issue in Pesach Sheni. Yet, matzah and maror to be eaten together with the Korban Pesach, that applies to the second as well as the first. Not breaking a bone, as I mentioned earlier, not leaving over for the morning, and a few and sundry etc's. Now, things are still a little strange. If you miss that one, there is no makeup. And you can't bring it the week before, and you can't bring it the day after. It is a very time-specific mitzvah, which the Rambam says is a separate mitzvah. It applies only to someone who didn't bring the first, but it is a standalone mitzvah, and it is not bringing the korban that should have been brought on the 14th of Nisan afterwards, because that's a violation. You cannot bring a korban out of its time frame. So we have an idea here which we need to focus on or sharpen a little. As a teacher, I always used to use the analogy to a major exam. I gave a major exam and a student missed it. I cannot, in this particular case, let's say, give him the exam when he comes back the next day, because the day before, after the test, I gave out the answers, we went over it, and it would be an unfair temptation to get this advanced information, take the test the next day, and breeze through it because you have the answers. But it was a major test, and rather than giving the person a zero, which will average in unfavorably to with his other grades, I say to him, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a different test. And this different test will count as if you took the test from the day before. Or it could have been, I'll assign you a book report, and that will qualify as your test. I'll mark it, and I'll write your mark in the column for the first day's test. Now, continuing the analogy, if you miss that second opportunity, that's it. Even if you have a doctor's note that you couldn't be at either the original testing date or this special permission for you, you lose it. It's not going to continue forever. That's sort of analogous to the way Pesach Sheni works. You miss it on the 14th of Nisan, you have an opportunity on the 14th of Iyar. You have good excuses for missing both of them, you're okay. Either one of them was intentionally missed, you're potentially in big trouble. But let's not get into that at the moment. Okay, so what do we have? We have something that should have been specific to time. You miss it, too bad, you'll do it again next year. Or, this is so important, do it again as many times or whenever you need to do it in order to participate. You don't get that either. What you get is one choice, one chance, after regular Pesach, called Pesach Katan or Pesach Sheni, and that's it. It's still time-related, but it makes the point, and it accommodated these specific individuals and anyone like them for all time, that there is that slight, I guess we'll have to call it that, a slight flexibility of Korban Pesach, which emphasizes its significance. Back to my analogy to school, if I told a student, you missed the test, don't worry, I'll average in your other tests, and it doesn't matter that you missed this one. Or, no, this was a very, very significant test, and I need to give you something to do that you should be counted as part of that process, having taken that test. It's somewhere in there. The only other area of halakha where we see something like it, and this is another reason why Pesach Sheni is a topic, as I mentioned many times already, that belongs a month ago or now, but not necessarily the rest of the year, except if I bring up this other issue, then it's an everyday topic. I'm talking about davening, prayer. A person who fell asleep at night and did not daven ma'ariv, arvit. What does he do? Well, the first thought is, if arvit is the evening service and you're allowed to pray it throughout the night and you fall asleep without having said it and you wake up in the morning, then what do you want me to tell you? You missed it. It doesn't, the time limit is over. Comes halakha, Jewish law, and says, and this is, I'm editorializing, we want you to feel that davening is a little bit more, or maybe a lot more, than just ritualistic prayers at certain times of the days, of the day, and that it does more than replace the korbanot of the Beit HaMikdash. The language of the Gemara is, tefillah is a petition for rachamim, for God's kindness and mercy. And therefore, to be that strict with a deadline needs to be softened a little. So how do you soften it? You tell someone you could daven arvit even though it's daytime? No, that contradicts the essence of the timing of prayer. Shacharit is the morning service. If it's not morning anymore, you can't daven shacharit. But I missed it. Well, again, one reaction could be, too bad. You have a good excuse, you're okay. You don't have a good excuse, you're in trouble. But the idea that beyond its time limit, you can do something to make up for that which you missed, needs to be understood that you're not davening Ba'ariv in the morning, but you're doing something else. What you are doing is duplicating the Amidah of Shacharit, and the second one will count, whatever that means, for the Arvit that you missed the night before. So to morning to afternoon, and afternoon to evening. This topic is called Tashlumin, makeup. But again, you have to emphasize that when you pray in the afternoon, it's the afternoon service that you're praying, not the morning service. The fact that you're doubling the afternoon service and the second time counts for the morning that you missed, getting back to the analogy of school, it would be a little different than the way I described Pesach Sheni. It would be like saying to a student, okay, you missed yesterday's test. You know what? The next test that you take, I will give you the same mark for the one that you missed. So you get an 87, you get two 87s. You get a 65, you'll only get two 65s. The next test is very important. Here, it's not exactly like that because you have to daven twice, Amidah, and the second one counts for the one that you missed. As long as I mention this as some form of parallel to Pesach Sheni, I've always found one very significant difference between the two. In davening, I mentioned before you fell asleep at night and you didn't get a chance to daven Ma'ariv, and the next thing you knew, you woke up in the morning. What if you didn't feel well? Okay, that's a good excuse too. What if you got so occupied with something that the time just went and you were unaware that you ran out of time? Okay. What if you thought that you davened and then you realized you didn't? That's okay too. Okay, meaning you could do Tashlumin in the morning by doing the second Amidah of Shacharit, which will count for the Arvit that you missed. What if you intentionally missed it? You said, I don't feel like davening now. I'm watching a final soccer game now. And, you know, I'll daven twice in the morning. This usually could happen, let's say, Mincha to Ma'ariv, not so much all night, but that's not the point. A person who intentionally misses a davening does not have halachic sanction to do tashlumin in the morning. Tashlumin at a davening is for a situation of ta'a v'lo hitpalel. You made a mistake and you didn't daven. You need an excuse. What about Pesach Sheni? Very interesting. Primary reasons for missing mentioned in the Torah, tameh or derech rechoka. Ritually defiled or far away from Jerusalem. Does not mention anything else. The Mishnah says, what about, mentions generally, Dafka not specifically, various situations of shogeg, inadvertent missing. Rambam is the one who brings up the issue of intention, intentionally missing. And according to the Rambam, which is halacha as far as I know, even a person who willfully, spitefully refused to do Pesach Rishon, he has no excuse at all. He was not tummy, he was not far away, he just didn't do it in spite, still has a positive command to bring Pesach Sheni. And if he does successfully bring it, he's off the hook for the devastating punishment of Karet, which is being cut off from the Jewish people by God. The difference between the davening, which you don't have the opportunity to do Tashlumin if you intentionally skipped, and Korban Pesach you do, I think is a reminder that the rabbinic law of prayer was formulated by finite human beings who were able to say, Adkan, until intentional, we let you do it, even if your excuse is lousy, but not intentional missing. But Pesach Sheni is divine, and God is infinite in his patience and in his waiting for even that spiteful violator to say, you know, I regret what I did, and I want to participate in Pesach Sheni. To me, that's a message of Pesach Sheni that goes beyond the 14th of Iyar and goes beyond Parshat Beha'alotcha. In the few minutes remaining, I would like to touch upon another facet of Parshat Beha'alotcha, a very irksome one. Beha'alotcha, in the beginning, starts out very nice. You have the menorah in the Mishkan. You have a portion about the Levim preparing for their service. You have, as we just finished talking about, Pesach Sheni. You have then the command to fashion two silver trumpets, which were used. They're called Chatzotzrot. I don't think we'll have too much time to talk about them, but hold off in a moment. You have the first traveling of the people. First time in almost a full year from Sinai that they are ready to move. And the direction of their movement is Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. Then the Torah makes an abrupt change of tone. You have a passage which some people used to have the custom of reading in a low, subdued voice, because it is very embarrassing to the people. The complaining, the terrible things they said about the man, which was miraculous, delicious food, and the chutzpah to complain the way they did, caused not only God's anger, but for the first time, even Moshe Rabbeinu did not jump to the defense of the people, and this was even worse for them. Every other time that God got angry, it triggered in Moshe his unique way of approaching God, saying, ease up on them, don't do this. And God would accept. Here, Moshe Rabbeinu saw the terrible, terrible thing that was happening. And from this point in Beha'alotcha, it's downhill. It's as if there was a crossroad, and the direction we should have been going in is, let's go into Eretz Yisrael, and we blew it. And it is up to us, the ones who hear and study the Torah every year, to say, we are at that crossroads, and which direction are we going to take? Are we going to say to them, no, 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 don't do that, don't complain, follow God and follow what he says, and go into Eretz Yisrael, and you'll have the good life? Beginning of Shalach next week, the Meraglim, sealing the fate of that generation. It's downhill for quite a while. But it happens. The change comes in Beha'alotcha. We cannot change what happened then. We have to try to change what's happening now so that we pull our act together and lead ourselves, all the Jewish people, and the world into the Messianic era. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.